everyone to the Women's Franchise Committee's Her Success, the Stories of Female Franchise Leaders. And today we have the honor of having Amy Chang with us, who is a founding partner of the Chang Cohen Law Firm that's based in Chicago, Illinois. Amy represents clients of all sizes from emerging to mature with multinational operations. Her unique combination of corporate and franchise experience provides her clients with comprehensive legal services to expand their franchise portfolios. And she has been just an absolute titan in the franchise industry. Amy did her undergrad work at the University of Michigan, for all of you Wolverine fans, and received her Juris Doctor, graduating magna cum laude at American University. She is an industry speaker and a published author. She's been recognized for her work and accomplishments with many awards over the years. A short list, because there are too many to include, she's been the past chair of the IFA Legal Symposium. She served on the Women's Franchise Committee. She's listed, in 2014, the best lawyers in America. She was in Chicago. She was Lawyer of the Year. She's listed as Best Lawyers in America, International Who's Who Legal for both franchise and business law, the Chicago Business Journal Women of Influence in 2016, the IFA's Women's Franchise Committee Crystal Compass Award winner in 2016, and most recently, the IFA Bonnie Levine Award in 2020, which I got the honor and pleasure of watching her receive. So as you can see, she has a lot of accomplishments that we wanted to highlight, but we really want to get to know Amy a little bit better. So I've been looking forward to our conversation, Amy, because you've had such a great career. So tell us, who has been some of your biggest mentors?
I would say my biggest mentor would be my parents. My parents have really, you know, from the time I was young, shown me hard work and perseverance. And so I have really just followed their footsteps. I have obviously had other mentors along the way, but I thought they gave me really the solid foundation, right? It's amazing what influence your parents can have on you without even maybe intending to have on you.
Now, we're going to talk a little bit about your family as well. And, you know, for me, it was the same thing. My parents were just amazing mentors without knowing that they were in helping, I think, shape my brother and I both for our careers and just being good people, caring about others, and just embracing positivity and knowing that we could dream big and work hard. And I think that is such an important piece. So since your parents were your biggest mentors, what was the best advice they ever gave you?
The best advice they ever gave me was, you know, I think it was really to not say no. I don't think they ever said no to me, no matter how wild of an adventure I wanted to take on when I was young. Looking back at it now, right, now that I have a daughter, I think, was that really a good idea? right? Perhaps not, but, you know, that's the really gave you the courage and no fear. It kind of, you got to experience what you wanted to experience. And with, again, without giving me advice in words, I think that was their ability to let me do what I wanted to do and experience life. So.
I'm just curious, do you have any siblings?
I do. And we are about as different as can be, but we're very close. I have a younger brother. He's 3 years younger than me, and he also went to University of Michigan. So we got to go to college together for 1 year. We went to the same high school. But from there, we kind of took different paths. I became a lawyer, and he became a doctor.
But both very professional careers. So certainly it sounds like your parents were great influences on both of you, as parents are You know, it's always amazing. My parents, like I said, I just couldn't have asked for a better upbringing. And while we certainly weren't a family of great means, we were a family that had a lot of love and safety and security and really caring about people. So I think that's always important.
Yeah, from listening to your interview that you had done with the WFC as well, it sounds like we actually had very similar upbringings, Emma.
Yeah. Good education is important. Value education. It's something that no one can take away from you. Yep. And work hard.
It sounds. I think your family ran a business as well, and you kind of grew up in the family business, right?
Yeah, I did. My parents, like I said, we weren't of great means, but my dad found himself in a compelling trauma in the recession of 72, and they ended up buying a business, an independent small business in Florida, and we moved from all of our family, our extended family, and it was pretty traumatic for me, actually. I still have trouble saying goodbye to people, that I don't see for long periods of time, but it was the best thing that happened because I did grow up in that business. I learned so much about small businesses and how to treat people well and what not to do. Exactly. It really does help shape you. And I think it gives you a work ethic that is just, I'll say, above average.
Right. That type of work ethic, I don't think you can be taught. You can only absorb by living with it.
Yeah, and seeing it and having it modeled for you. You know, so much of what we learn growing up is modeled behavior, and you hope that you take all of the good and keep that, and kind of, if there was any bad, and I'm not saying with your parents, I'm just saying around you, you kind of learn what not to do as well. So,
absolutely.
So what has been some of the biggest challenges in your profession that has, you know, I'm sure when you were coming through was still predominantly male, although I know a lot has changed.
Definitely. I mean, there has been challenges, and the biggest challenge, I would say, is the fact that, I'll give you an example. I remember coming out of law school when I was interviewing for jobs. I had interviewed with a large firm here in Chicago, very well known, still around, and had a great interview. Really loved meeting all of the various attorneys, and the hiring partner called me, who was a middle-aged male, and he said, everyone loved speaking to you, everyone loved meeting you, but can I give you a word of advice? Maybe not smile so much during an interview, because it seems to make you seem younger. So what do you do with that, right? that says, you know, you really hit home, because you realize, well, you know, there's some things about you that you cannot change, right? My size, for example, I'm not gonna be any taller. 5'1" is going to be it. I can add on a few, you know, inches with the heels, but that's about it, right? Your personality and the fact that, you know, I do smile in an interview can be counted against you. And, you know, when I was in my 20s, I looked quite young, small, short, and young, right? And female, probably not a great combination for trying to find start a legal career at that time. But, you know, on the other hand, there were people who clearly looked past that and, you know, liked what I had to offer. So it was one of those lessons that while it really hit home, and for a few days, you kind of sat there going, what do I do now? You work beyond it, and you just, you know, you can't take in everyone's comments personally.
No, you can't. And, you know, all four of those things that you listed in your 20s, there was nothing you could do about them.
Exactly.
Nothing. No. Nothing.
Absolutely nothing. I mean, I could have sat there and cried and said, I'm not going to be a lawyer, or I'm never going to be a lawyer, or I could move on and go to another interview. So.
And you moved on and went to another interview, because exactly. That's what we do. You know, it's finding ways to say yes. Interesting, you were talking about the feedback that the attorney was, that who you were interviewing with gave you. It's like, we all loved you, but. And those, there's three words that I really try not to use in my vocabulary. When you use them, anything that comes after them is an excuse. But is one of those words. Yep. But just because.
Yep.
And I would even add in can't. Anything that comes after those four is just an excuse.
Yep.
Or a negative.
Yep.
So anyway. So those were the challenges in the early days. What are the challenges now for you and in your firm and in the industry?
Challenges now, at the firm, I think the biggest challenge is still, even after it's been 13 years since we started Chain Cohen, but my biggest challenge is still to be a good boss. How to be a good boss. It's again, not something that I learned in law school, not something I learned anywhere, right? Nobody sat me down and gave me a lesson. So that's been, I would say, my biggest challenge is making sure that I do the best that I can. Knowing that, I always tell people that work for me, I'm never going to be perfect, but I will always try and I will always take feedback. So
where do you go? You know, one of the questions that I had for you is sometimes being a leader can be very isolating. There aren't, you know, the people that are with you day to day, they aren't in your role. They don't have your responsibilities. They're unique to your organization. And it can be isolating. So as a leader, you have to be on all the time, right? You're positive, calming when there needs to be calm, nurturing, firm when you need to be firm. So how do you navigate those ups and downs from a leadership standpoint?
Take a lot of deep breaths. And I think one of the biggest challenges is to try when you are having difficulty with something to sometimes, you know, the people who work with you understand that things can be challenging. And if you can get that empathy from them and really be a person and speak to them like people, to hope that they understand that you may not be having a great day. And there'll be times when I'll tell them that this is really just a bad day, right? You have to be able to admit that. And I think people will tell you that I'm an open book. People kind of know what's going on with me. And I try to use that to my advantage. Because there are going to be certain days where you're going to be a little off, and to be able to admit that, I think is important.
I do too. So who do you, you know, as you continue to try to be a better leader for your organization, who do you lean on for advice?
There's so many people I lean on for advice. Other mentors. I still once in a while, I still call my dad. Almost 80 years old and no idea what the practice of the law is. But there's still days when I still call my dad. I lean on my partners a lot and to get their feedback, because I feel like, you know, running a firm is not, it's not a one person show, and it can't be. So to me, it's really important. A lot of what we do here is not, it shouldn't be me trying to do it. And I'm a big fan of leading by consensus. So, and making sure that you get people's buy-in. So I really do lean on everyone here to give me their opinions and to give me their support. And I'm very fortunate that I have good partners, and I have good lawyers who work for me, good staff members who really give me that support. And I think those are the people that you really do need to be able to lean on. And without the people who work with us right now, we certainly would not be here.
Yeah, it's so important to surround yourself with individuals who can lift you up when you need to be lifted up and share in your vision, and not be afraid to give honest feedback.
Exactly.
I mean, honesty and transparency to me are just such important parts of an organization.
Right. And that's the one thing that is, to me, the backbone, really, of this organization, as far as internally, is being honest with each other. And I always tell people, people make mistakes, right? And everyone makes mistakes. And if you come to a point where you think you may have made a mistake, the most important thing is to be honest and to get somebody to help to see how we can fix it together. I will always be more forgiving of the person who is honest with me and get me involved than the person who tries to hide it.
Right. Yeah, I always talk about manage my expectations, be honest and manage my expectations. I don't want to have to follow up with you, keep me informed, let me be part of your circle of advisors,
right,
so that we can work through this together, because we're all working towards the same goals.
Yep.
We just may take different roads to get there, and that's okay.
Yep.
It really is okay. So, you've worked for firms in the past before you founded your current firm, and we'll talk a bit about that. But I'm sure that you've found in your career, you've learned so much from mentors who have inspired you. And that's true, and that gets asked of all of us. The one question I'm always interested in, though, that not often gets asked is, tell me about, or if there was a time that you had somebody that was uninspiring that you worked for or with, and what did you learn from them, or maybe even learn what not to do?
Oh, yes.
As a result of them.
Yes, definitely. The one thing that when I started out as a lawyer that I learned was you work with various different people, right? And you pick up stuff that's good. You hopefully don't pick up that's bad, but trying to parse through all that. Mm-hmm. I think the important thing I learned was to get people invested and involved in no matter how small the task is. So that is, you're working on a project, you give somebody a project, making sure that they understand the goals of the project, why you're doing this project, and the background and the client. It's really important. And if you, instead of giving somebody a very discreet 30-minute task, if you take that extra 5-10 minutes to explain why we're doing something, and what it will be used for, I think that the person who's going to accomplish that is going to spend a lot more time and do a better job. So I found that when I had people who just gave me things without explaining, without telling me why, it was really hard to get as motivated, right, to accomplish something the best that you can do, to do the best you can do, if you didn't understand the why.
It certainly doesn't help. And I think that's one of the real gaps between being a good leader and an average or subpar leader, is understanding that everyone really values personal growth, professional growth, and development. And the way that you do that is through dialogue. It's through understanding the what, the why, and the how, into how something is going to be used, why it's so important, why you were even selected to be the one to do it, and being able to personally validate the value that someone brings to your organization. And to me, that has been such a disconnect. There was a gentleman that I worked for very early in my career, and it was with a franchise concept, the first one I worked for. And I remember him, I was a single mother, and I remember him coming into my office one day, and I was the only female that worked for him besides his administrative assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And he walked in, he drove 30 miles to my office because I wasn't even in his same location. And he said, after all the chit chat, he kind of leans across the desk and says, nobody really wants to know about your your kid or your personal life. And I thought, wow, you know, this is what we do is about relationships. It's wow. about people. It's about emotion. And that's what you're telling me. And that's when I thought, you know, I will never be a leader that won't care about all parts of whatever my colleagues around me, my staff want to share. I'm not going to pry. However, I want to be available and I want to know them. I want them to know I'm invested in their life, their performance, their Absolutely. Professional development, because there's just no, you know, people will work. They will do so much more if they understand that the role they play, why it's important, and why you care about them.
Yep, I absolutely agree. And honestly, one of the hardest things I think about being a leader is, you said you don't want to pry, right? I feel the same way. How do you balance that? You want to make sure that you don't seem like you're prying about somebody's personal life, and yet you want to be involved and you want to understand what's going on in their life. So I find it really hard to find that balance, and I just struggle because I would like to know, and I want to, because I think it's important, because whatever is going on in your life is going to impact, no matter how perfect you are, it will impact you professionally in some way.
It will. And to your point earlier, you're more forgiving, we'll say in this case, understanding, when there is that relationship that you can share that information.
Right.
And it, to me, it's really, really a part of being we always talk about being a franchisor of choice for home helpers. I talk to our staff about being an employer of choice mm-hmm. and what that means to us and what our culture looks like. Because those relationships are important, and we have really good tenure, like I know you do in your organization, of people who want to be there, and they are there for the right reasons. So tell me about a defining moment in your career that either changed, enhanced, or catapulted the trajectory of your career, of your journey.
Well, I think it would definitely be the day that I left a law firm with 3,000 plus lawyers to a law firm of two and stepped into a loft office that was very different, with almost no furniture, and, you know, eating lunch on top of a box. That was one of those moments when you kind of sit there and you said, okay, well, this can either go really well or this can go really badly. But you had to make the changes in your life to make that happen and to make that work. And that was definitely one of those moments that I will always remember.
So what drove you to that decision of leaving such a large firm and stepping out on your own and founding Chain Cohen with two partners, you and Rick?
It was, you know, a lot of it was really our clients. We're very fortunate in that we have been, I think through my career, I've had some amazing clients and who have been my, you know, you have your home family and you kind of have your work family. And the franchise organization has, and then the industry has been there in terms of people who are and are not clients, but particularly the people who have been my clients and the support that they have given me. I cannot thank them before. And it was back 14 years ago now, you know, I had a lot of clients who, as firms were getting larger and larger, they were looking for a more kind of intimate relationship and a partner to grow their franchise systems. And a lot of them started asking me about what if you did this, or what if you did that? And we started thinking and thought, okay, well, if what, you know, how, how many of our clients would feel the same way, and kind of putting together a vision of what this firm would look like and how we would be able to help franchise companies. And it, to really be more of a, it's really hard, I feel like, to create an environment and to create a firm that can truly be a franchisor's partner in the various stages of their growth to be, when you're with such a large firm, that, and we really want to create something unique for our clients. So that's how it kind of all started. And as we never envisioned, frankly, I never envisioned Chain Cohen that we have now. It's very different than the vision I had probably 13 years ago. But I feel we have really tried to keep the same vision and to be able to be a place where franchisors can go to.
And your reputation is just stellar.
Thank you.
In the industry and the work that you all have done on behalf of the industry, and the leadership has just been outstanding. And you know, as recognized by your all's many, many, many awards over the years. You know, we've talked a lot about leadership in general. However, you know, the Women's Franchise Committee, their charge is helping foster and empower women in franchising specifically. And you and I, while I'm a bit older than you are, you and I both have started our careers in what was male-dominated industries or professions. And we've seen a lot of change. So if as you're thinking about, I'm being a leader, a female leader, and being a male leader, is, I don't care what anyone says, it's different. So if you were to think about today, what are some of the top qualities that you would note that a woman should have to be successful in franchising specifically or in business? Are there certain qualities or characteristics that you think are just, they have to be there?
Yeah, there are definitely a few. One that comes to my mind would be to be able to put aside whether you're male or female. And I know that sounds strange, because how do you put that aside? But there's so many situations I feel like you come across as a female leader that if you constantly are thinking about it, it's not gonna help you, right? When you're in a room surrounded by 15 men, and if you're thinking about, I am a female leader, right? Or I'm female, that is, unfortunately, not going to help you through a situation like that. So to be able to kind of get through any situation and have that confidence. So, and especially as a female leader, I think confidence is one of the most important characteristics. And how do you get that, right? With my daughter, it's one of the things I constantly am thinking about. How do you give a young woman, a young girl, the confidence to grow into as she gets older? Because I think without that characteristic, it would be very, very difficult. And then another one, I think it's great that there's so many more female leaders, because I think we are just in many ways more nurturing than a male leader. And that's a quality that does differentiate us. But that can be used to our advantage. And I think it is a good quality to have. And to have that, I think when it changes an organization, when I see an organization that's being led by a woman versus male, I feel like that there's a differentiation there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. You know, I agree with you. You know, I've been in many meetings throughout my career, sat on boards throughout my career where I was the only female. And I will tell you, walking into that room, that wasn't what I thought about. It was, right. Am I prepared?
Exactly.
You know, have I done the homework? Can I articulate my position well? Can I make the business case to get alignment to move something forward? Now, I will say that what I have, especially today, in the early days, you know, I did find that, you know, that work ethic of having to work a little bit harder was was there to get noticed a little bit. That's not to where I feel today. However, I'm in a position that, as I said, you know, there aren't very many at our level in running our own organizations. And so maybe I don't see it, but I remember starting to come to the Women's Franchise Committee annual leadership event back in like 2001. And that was the first time, but there was only 40 people in the room at that time. And I remember sitting there going, wow, this is awesome. These are women that I can learn from, you know? Right. At the end of the day, though, now where I know you and I both are, is we just want to learn from the best. It doesn't matter. We just want to learn from the best. And like you, I'm always trying to be a better leader, because I think it is important to continue to you know, show your staff that you're growing with them.
Right.
You know, it's just not them, that you're willing to grow and get sometimes uncomfortable as well to grow.
So. Yep. Certainly during these times.
Yes. Very much so. So I know family is very important to you. You and I have talked about it over recent years. And, you know, you highlighted that your parents were your biggest mentors. So, and certainly they've played a part in the woman that you have become today. And I know you have a daughter, and family time is important to you. So, but tell us a little bit about what an 8-year-old Amy was like.
Oh, you had to pick that year, huh?
8, 10. You pick the year. Just tell us what a young Amy was like. How about that?
I can still, so it was when I was 8 that my family picked up and moved to the state. So I was in, I grew up in Taiwan. And when I was 8, we moved to Tulsa, Oklahoma. So 8-year-old Amy was quite awkward. had, you know, when we talk about that confidence, I really think that confidence came through the experience that I had after I was 8. Because, you know, we moved to the States and none of us spoke any English whatsoever. And I was popped into a U.S. school system, you know, in Oklahoma, you know, where there were not a lot of non-English speakers at that time. So had to learn, and we kind of, and that's probably why we are so close as a family too, because you really have to be close to each other. You're the only support, you know, for each other. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so my parents had a Chinese restaurant, and I was the one, because they were older, and when you're older, as we all know, it's harder to learn a different language. So I think I was able to be able to pick up English a little faster. So my parents were a little older and had a harder time picking up, didn't have as much time to study English either, right? And my brother was a little bit too young, he was only 5 years old. And so kind of gave me a lot of responsibility to having to try to, as you know, as I learn English, try to help my parents and to be there for them and to be the translator, even though my English was certainly not good. I think I knew like 3 words when I landed. So that was 8. And as I took on kind of that responsibility, I think that's what kind of helped me get that confidence to know that if you can get through this, right, kids making fun of you at school and getting through all that and dealing with all that, you can persevere through anything. I think that's, although I didn't think about it back then, when I look back at it now, I thought, you know, that I'm sure helped me. That was a good experience for me, even though at the time, I certainly did not think so.
So looking back, if you knew then what you know now, what would you tell that young girl, that young Amy?
I would say that I would tell that young girl that she was doing a good job, which, you know, you don't hear a lot of back then. And right. How I feel like how we grew up, you know, giving praises to, as we do now, to young children was not as prevalent. And so we didn't get a lot of that feedback. So I think, you know, puts you in a, are you doing a good enough job? And, you know, it's funny because instead of every, I still remember a lot of people my age always said, you know, their parents always, you know, was asking about grades and pushing them and to succeed. My parents were kind of the opposite. I don't think they're ever asked about it, but because of that, I think we expected, like my brother and I just were expected to do our best. And we did, we both did. So it makes me kind of question about my own way of parenting sometimes. When mm-hmm. I look back at it, I was like, maybe I should just be quiet.
What I found growing up in my time, my parents certainly demonstrated love for us and hugs and kisses and tucking in at night and reading stories. And what I saw demonstrated, though, wasn't necessarily the words, it was the actions.
Right.
You know, it was yeah. more the words. It was an understanding.
Right. And you know, that's just very hard for me because, you know, that's how I grew up and that's kind of my background. Mm-hmm. There weren't a lot of words to praise, but it was the action that your parents would show you. Whereas working now and trying to be a leader, you have to, it's different, right? And I have to try really hard to understand that not everyone comes from my background. And there are people who do need more words and not just action. And I have to keep that in mind, which I don't do a great job of, to be honest. As a leader, that's something I'm constantly trying to remind myself of.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever read the book, The Five Love Languages.
No.
It's actually meant for personal relationships between mm-hmm. your spouse, your significant other, whatever mm-hmm. the case may be. But as I read that, you know, I met my husband 10 years ago, and I've been single for many years and out of the dating scene for many, many years. And so someone suggested I read the book, and I did. As I'm reading it, though, what's funny is I'm saying, yeah, this is really applicable to my, you know, our personal relationships. It's applicable to your professional relationships, too. If you can figure out, like, as I was reading the different love languages, mm-hmm. one of them is words of affirmation. And I could see in my staff those that really did thrive on words of affirmation. Or acts of service. That's another one. And you could say, okay, if you can just do something small for them, this act of service, they respond to that. And so you're right. Not, we all don't come from the same background, and what drives us is different. And right. So you're absolutely right.
That's most important, I think, to figure out. And what drives everyone of the people who work for us is different too. So I feel like one of our jobs is to figure out what will help drive each individual, because everyone is different.
Yeah. So we're both wives and mothers, and I know for you that is of great joy. So with a busy career, how do you achieve balance?
Oh, I'm not sure that word exists yet. I'm still trying to figure that out. So for me, it's funny, until, you know, when your focus, I mean, my focus ever since, you know, when I was young and through the most of my career was work, and balance was just not necessary, right? And it wasn't in my vocabulary. And so I didn't need to find balance. I worked whenever, wherever, it just did not matter. And when you get used to that, until, you know, you don't have a child until you're in your 40s, It's a harsh reality. it's really hard to find that balance. And, you know, luckily, I have a job that does give me a little bit of that balance. I may work a lot, I may work a lot of hours, but I really try hard to think about that time and make sure I'm at every performance, no matter how small it is, right? Every recital, every play. And I have really tried hard to be part of my daughter's life. And as she's getting older now, you know, it's I'm trying to find a new balance with just carving out time for yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Which didn't really exist. You know, you were a single mom. When your child is three and they keep saying you need to find time for yourself and balance, you're like, what? Right?
That doesn't exist.
Doesn't exist. And you just have to recognize it doesn't exist, and that's okay for a certain number of years. But as that definition, I feel like, changes as your life changes, and as you know, as she's getting older, I can find a little bit more time, and which did not exist a few years ago. So I'm forever struggling with balance. One of these days, I will figure it out.
I don't know that you ever do. I mean, my daughter's 30. I have a 5-year-old granddaughter who I love and dearly, and I love to spend time with. I think that no matter which way you go, though, there's still this guilt that, you know, that you just never are quite enough, you mm-hmm. know, anywhere. And of course, that drives you to be even better as a result. So when you do have family activities, what's your all's favorite things to do as a family?
To be outside, to be where we like to be, because physically active. Mm-hmm. And so we'll do a lot of things outside, biking and trips. I think our biggest family activity when we really have kind of our family time is we travel a lot. And so, you know, the last 8 years, I think we've probably been to like a dozen different countries, and it's just one of the things that we all enjoy doing. And I want to make it part of my daughter's life as well. And she's funny. She's, it's to give you a good example of, is when she was a few years ago, much, she was younger. We went to Missouri one day and we got there and she looked at me and said, "Mom, do people speak English here?" And it's, you know, just how that shows kind of like she's used to countries where people don't speak English. And I think it's from my past, where going to a country with a different language was such a kind of, it went from a immediately, I wouldn't say it's not a bad experience, but a harsh experience. I've really tried to turn that, and now I love traveling to different countries, and that's one of my passions, I would say.
Well, that's, you know, I love to travel too. I haven't traveled nearly as extensively as you have. I think it's wonderful though to expose children to different cultures, different backgrounds and food, and just, I think that's such a rich foundation for children to grow and to understand the world, right? That the world looks and is different than just where they live, and how we can all learn from those cultures and those experiences.
Right.
It's just a wonderful foundation. So I want to do a little rapid fire round with you. I've got five questions that I just want to hear kind of what your thoughts are. So if there was a movie about your life, which actress would play you?
Julie Andrews. Even though I can't sing.
And why Julie Andrews?
I will forever remember her in her role as Mary Poppins. So talk about firm yet nurturing is who I would like to be. Right? So yep. She always comes to my mind.
Okay, so what profession other than yours would you like to attempt?
Attempt means I have to have some chance of succeeding, right?
Well,
probably probably, if I was not a lawyer and I could do anything else I want to right now, I would do something in sports. Physical training, a Pilates instructor or something like that.
Ah, interesting. If you could have a dinner and a discussion with anyone, who would that be and why?
Who would that be and why? That's a tough one. I would say, well, I'm going to try to stay away from politics.
Understand.
Right?
Understand.
Honestly, I don't know the answer to that one. That's a tough one, Emma.
It is a tough one. And because right now, everything within me wants to talk to specific politicians.
Exactly.
Because of what's going on in the world around me. However,
exactly. You know who I would love to speak to?
Who?
The president of New Zealand.
Yes, that's a great one. She has done so many things right.
Talk about a female leader, And the other female leader, I know this is politics still, but I've been really impressed with Lori Lightfoot, our Chicago's new mayor, and how she has handled the entire COVID situation. Did an amazing job, somebody new in her role. I feel horribly for her, that what she has been through the last 6 months. Both of these female leaders, I feel like, have done so much and really shown leadership.
I agree. Those are
to be able to tap in their brains and
those are two really good ones. So if you could acquire any skill or talent that you don't currently have, what would it be?
I would learn to play the guitar.
Good. For me, it would be the piano.
See, I was a pianist when I was young, and I always loved piano. I still have my piano from when I was, I think I got it when I was 10. Still have my piano. But guitar is one of those things that I always look so cool when people play, and, right? But
yeah,
one of these days, I'll learn.
That's true. So last rapid fire question, what brings you joy?
Different. Ties to the conversation we had a few minutes ago. I think it was traveling and tasting different types of food. Food and wine and travels, that brings me joy.
Very good. Well, Amy, thank you so much for your time today. But is there any other words of wisdom that you would share with our listeners?
Well, thank you so much for spending this time with me, Emma. It's been such a pleasure. The last thing I would say would be don't be afraid to try anything.
I agree.
My word of wisdom. Kind of back to your words, no buts, no because.
Right? Yes. Find a way to say yes.
Find a way to say yes, because when you say yes and you try something new, I feel like everybody I have kind of forced to do something has impressed me with the abilities that they have, and you wouldn't know until you tried it.
That's so true. Well, thank you so much, Amy. It truly has been a pleasure catching up with you today, and thank you for sharing your experiences and insights with our audience, and look forward to connecting with you again soon.
Thanks, Emma.
Bye-bye.
Bye.